Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to our show here. It's Thursday. Sure, happy it's Thursday. We're almost at the end of another crazy week and heading into that little weekend time when we can sort of take a deep breath and say, okay, thank goodness the government is closed for the weekend. They can't do anything more to screw up the nation if they're taking the days off here. Now, we're going to start here with the economy before we get going in there. Matt is in the control room. He's swiddling the dials. He's keeping an eye on all of us to make sure we stay out of trouble. And our phone number, if you care to join us on the air, is 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. I'm not even going to bother with the Dow. I mean, yes, it's up a little bit, and who cares, because it's just absolutely not connected with what's going on here in the real world. And in the real world, do you remember not too long ago when the U.S. government, the Federal Reserve, Bernanke and Paulson and all the rest of those people were out there and they're talking about, you know, we've got to save the banks from those toxic assets. It's those toxic assets that are wrecking the economy and so forth and so on. And one of the plans they put forward was really very simple. Last September, they allowed the banks to go back to using what is called mark-to-market accounting. And this is an accounting principle where the owners of an asset can decide for themselves what the asset is worth. They don't have to look at fair value. They don't have to look at what people are paying for the assets. They can just say, I have this asset, and I believe it'll be worth X at some point in the far future. And the instant they were able to do that, all of a sudden the banks that were hovering at the edge of collapse all of a sudden started looking good, because now they had more assets on paper than they had liabilities, and that put them into the black, and it looked really, really good. Okay, so far so good. But the reality is those assets are still toxic, and they still need to get them off their books so they can capitalize and get the money flowing again, or at least that's what we're being told. Mostly they just need the money so they can unwind from all these derivatives. So here's the deal. The banks took these toxic assets, and under the change of the accounting rules, bookkeeping change, they revalued them way, way up there and said, wow, look, we're incredibly rich. And if it sounds a lot like what Enron was doing, that's not a coincidence. That is precisely what Enron was doing. So anyway, here's the problem. Now they came along with this plan and they said, we're going to let you value the assets high, and then we're going to get some investors to buy those assets. And we, the government, using money from the taxpayers or borrowed on the taxpayers' credit cards, will make up the difference between what the banks are saying the assets are worth and what the market is willing to pay for them. So far, so good. Everybody wins except the taxpayer, which is the American way. But here's the problem. The banks have had to run the value of these toxic assets way, way up high in order to look profitable, to look good to their stockholders, to look good on the stock market. And the problem is the people considering buying these assets, they know they're toxic assets. They know they're high risk. They know that they're intentionally overvalued. And even with all of the additional taxpayer money that the government is throwing in to try and sweeten the pot, the people looking at buying these assets understand that the problem with an overvalued asset is the first time there's a dip and somebody starts selling, everybody will unload. There'll be a panic because there's no value to support the prices. What we're seeing here in these toxic assets in the banks is the same mechanism of a crash you see in the stock market. When the stock market is overvalued, when you don't have real worth, real earnings ability to support the inflated prices, then the first time there's a major sell-off, the value of the stocks all drop down until their P.E. ratios are a little bit more realistic. And that's the situation where we are right now. So, no surprise, the banks are not finding anybody who wants to buy these toxic assets at anything approaching the price the banks want to sell them, even with the little bit of vigorish being thrown in by the U.S. government. So this whole plan has been canceled. They're not going to try and do it anymore because it just flat out isn't working. So the government has basically saddled you with $100,000 per taxpayer in tax debt for all of these financial shenanigans, and here we are again getting a confirmation that it's not really working. It's all bookkeeping tricks. It's all funny number crunching. It's all changing the laws. It's all patching. They're trying to basically, you know, they're rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic is what they're doing. Okay? And the problem with having a government that is mostly lawyers and bookkeepers, this is all they know how to do. change the rules, total up the columns a different way. We'll make it work somehow. And the reality is that we have allowed our manufacturing to go away. We have just collapsed the foundation of our economy, which is the working class people of America. Our government has turned its back on the working class people of America. And we're seeing this continue. And none of this is going to work. They're just delaying what now appears to be an inevitable crash. Now, there's another warning sign on the horizon. We're getting some indicators out of Nevada. As you may be aware, around Las Vegas, I mean, times are really, really hard out there. Las Vegas is a pleasure city. It is a tourism city. It is almost completely dependent on gamblers coming in and playing with money. And obviously, as the economy has tightened and there isn't a lot of money to play with, the real gamblers are all in Wall Street playing with the derivatives. And the occasional recreational gamblers, they don't have the money to come to Vegas anymore. I mean, I've been seeing some of the inducements and enticements there. I mean, they're practically giving away the plane tickets and the rooms to get you to come out there. And, room comes complete with a call girl and all the rest of this other stuff. And it's not working. And so there's a huge foreclosure problem out there. People are losing their homes. Nobody has any money. People are leaving Las Vegas. And we're starting to get indications that the banks that are holding all of these foreclosed homes in the Las Vegas area may be in a situation where they're going to be forced to put them on the market because they can't afford to just carry them anymore. And here's the real danger. We are aware. We don't know how big the problem is, but we know that banks that have foreclosed on all these homes, they're hanging on to them. They're not putting them on the market because the more empty homes go on the market, then the lower the prices are going to be driven, and they don't want that to happen. So they're only letting a few of the houses out there. They're trying to get a little bit of confidence going that there are houses to be bought and there are mortgages to be had. But people aren't buying them. And the problem is that if the banks in Nevada start dumping their houses on the market, it's going to start driving prices down. And then they'll all dump their houses onto the market and try and sell them as fast as they can, rather than get caught with yet again more depreciating assets. And the problem with that is if housing prices collapse, if the banks are forced to dump their properties onto the market, and housing prices collapse again, it's going to put more homeowners into a negative equity situation where they're going to owe more on the mortgages than their houses are actually worth, and you're going to start seeing more walkaways, more voluntary foreclosures, more people just going to the bank and saying, here are the keys, I can't do this anymore. And so it's continuing, the crash is continuing to accelerate. It is not over, there are no green shoots, except the stuff they're smoking in their pipes in the back rooms at the Capitol building, I guess. There is no glimmer of hope, because hope rests in putting America back to work, bringing back the jobs, bringing back the jobs. Nobody is asking for socialism. Nobody is asking for communism. Nobody's asking for handouts. Nobody's asking for charity. All we, the people, want is what we had before. What we built before, what we earned before, before the government, with its tax codes, encouraged corporations to send all of our jobs to other countries in order to maximize their profitability. Ooh, that worked out really well. That's all we want. We're not asking for socialism and freebies and help us with this and that. We want the country back to having a healthy economy in which we're all working, and we are all pursuing our businesses, and we're all paying our bills. Doesn't that strike you as a really good idea to have a country where everybody's working and everybody's able to pay their bills? Doesn't that strike you as something that would be really ideal? And yet, everything we're seeing our government and our corporate leaders do seems designed to bring the economy to an absolute standstill. The money supply is drying up. There isn't enough money for people to do what it is they like to do for a living. There isn't enough money to pay the bills. It's all just being sucked into this big black hole in Washington, D.C. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
is Cascadia Public Radio.
Some are maxed out all their credit cards. Some are working two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof, won't pay for a drink. If you gotta have proof, distract yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far 5:15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here anymore.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. Now, in recent weeks, I have been talking about the central flaw in the reserve system of banking, which is a currency issued by a bank that bears interest. All the money in circulation in the United States represents a loan from a private bank. It is not money that is issued by the government. It's not the way we set this up. And an interesting little aspect of history surfaced that even I was unaware of. And I say even I was unaware of because it revolves around Ben Franklin, who was one of my, still is, one of my big heroes when I was growing up. I grew up in New England. When we talk about the history of the American Revolution, part of that's family history. One of my ancestors signed the Declaration of Independence. So we sort of consider it, you know, we're very possessive about it. And when I was young, I sort of fastened onto the character of Ben Franklin because he liked to tinker and he liked to make things and he invented bifocals and the Franklin stove and he did his experiments with electricity and was really quite an amazing figure in his time. Well, actually, he'd be quite an amazing figure today. So anyway, in his journals, a small little piece of history has surfaced and has to do with the early economy of the United States. Ben Franklin, of course, served in the role of a diplomat between the colonial government, this is before the Revolution, and Great Britain. And on one of his trips to Great Britain, Ben Franklin was surprised to see rampant unemployment and poverty in the British working classes. It's terrible, terrible privations going on. Ben Franklin was asked by his hosts in the British government how the American colonies managed to collect enough money to support the poorhouses. And Ben Franklin replied, "We have no poorhouses in the colonies, and if we had some, there'd be nobody to put in them, because in the colonies there's not a single unemployed person. There are no beggars, there are no tramps. Everybody has a job, everybody is making a living." And the reason was that the colonies were printing up their own money. It was issued by the governments in the form of notes with a fixed unit of value to which there was no fee or interest attached. Well, horror upon horrors, this is just something that could not be allowed to stand. So in 1764, the Bank of England lobbied Parliament to get a Currency Act passed that made it illegal for any of the colonies to print and use their own money. The colonies were forced to transact all their business in the official money of the British Empire, and all taxes to Britain had to be paid in silver or gold. And if you did not have the silver or gold to pay the taxes, you had to borrow it from the Bank of England at interest. Within a year of this policy, the colonies were suffering from the same rampant unemployment and poverty as Great Britain itself, because of this change of the laws. And Ben Franklin wrote in his journals that had it only been about the tax on tea, and had it only been about the abuses of the colonials by the British troops, that there probably would never have been a revolution, because everybody did have a pretty comfortable life. Everybody was working, everybody was building the nation, and things were going along rather smoothly. It was this Currency Act that forced the people to go to private banks for the public money that created the poverty and the crushing unemployment and the resentment that fueled the American Revolution. And as a result of this, when the new government was formed, they created a Treasury Department with the power to issue the currency of the United States of America. They recreated in the new United States the same economic system that had worked to make the colonials so prosperous, much to the anger and ire of the Bank of England. And we had numerous attempts within our nation's history to go back to that system of bank-issued public tender at interest. that was revoked the first two times, and then, of course, in 1913, the Federal Reserve Act was passed through Congress and signed into law by Woodrow Wilson, which permanently enslaved us to this Federal Reserve. And we go back here to, we've had two presidents who have attempted to free us from bank-issued money. Remember, Thomas Jefferson himself said that a private bank issuing the public currency is the greatest threat to liberty, greater than even foreign armies. And he's absolutely correct, because we're there right now. Lincoln, rather than enslave the American people to a 30% compound interest annual on a war debt for the Civil War, simply revived his presidential authority through the Treasury to issue his own national currency, the greenback. We talked about this last week, but I want to go back and read this comment from an editorial in the London Times that was written in response to Abraham Lincoln's issuing of the greenback notes. This is a direct quote. If that mischievous financial policy, which had its origin in the North American Republic, should become indurated down to a fixture, then that government will furnish its own money without cost. It will pay off debts and be without a debt. It will have all the money necessary to carry on its commerce. It will become prosperous beyond precedent in the history of the civilized governments of the world. The brains and wealth of all countries will go to North America. That government must be destroyed, or it will destroy every monarchy on the globe. Okay, basically what you're seeing here in the London Times is the recognition by the bankers of Europe that a government issuing its own currency was the first step to freeing the people from the designed, planned enslavement of the banks. That rampant poverty and unemployment to keep you dependent and helpless is designed into the system. And I'm aiming this comment to those of you out there who are you've lost your job, or you've had to take a lower paying job and you're struggling to keep your homes. This is by design. You did not do anything to deserve your current situation. It is being done to you intentionally, by design, by the Federal Reserve System, which, as its inherent core flaw, creates a state of permanent indebtedness for the people. Because there is no money, there is only debt instruments. It's all on the basis of credit and loans, and once it goes into operation, more money is owed than is actually in existence. And this is why, when the currency law was passed and the United States had to use the Bank of England's money system, there was rampant poverty and unemployment, because there's never enough money to circulate through the entire society, because so much of it is being lost back to the banks as interest. And certainly in the case of our own Federal Reserve System, it's not like they've been putting their own money out as loans. They just print it up. It's a legalized counterfeiting system. Right now, the U.S. federal government, meaning you, because they're going to make you pay for it, is $65 trillion in debt. A huge portion of that is owed to the Federal Reserve Bank. And here's the thing. The Federal Reserve Bank just prints up the money, paper and ink and a printing press, and it's out the door as money. And it gets spent and used, and it is still owed back to the Federal Reserve plus accruing interest. We are paying interest on money that never existed in the first place. And all of this debt everybody's talking about that they're in, is it's an imaginary money that never existed in the first place, paid on money that wasn't real in any sense of value or worth to begin with. It's a con game. It's snake oil. Please don't fall for it. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
When all this twisted steel was swept away, did these remaining holes reveal what?
Aloha, America. Welcome back to our show. We're talking about finances and the Federal Reserve, and I think we've just about reached the point where everybody realizes the system has failed us utterly and completely. It was never put in place for our benefit. We had a system. When the founding fathers set up this country, they set up a financial and monetary system they knew would be the best for the ordinary American people. And over time, the bankers have just worked perniciously to undermine our strong monetary system and replace it with this fictional, imaginary money system. It's legalized counterfeiting. I mean, just think about it. It is really that simple. The Federal Reserve prints up money or just types it into a computer out of thin air and then loans it to you, and you must work to pay back that amount in labor. It's a piece of paper, and you are basically indebted to them for life. I mean, I don't know about you, but the current government debt spread onto the people right now is running about $500,000 per household. We're never going to live long enough to pay that off, is the bottom line. We are indebted slaves for life. It is indentured servitude. They have succeeded in bringing back the American Republic. An economy is already destroyed. The Federal Reserve has destroyed it. They have brought back indentured servitude. The crowned heads of Europe are no doubt laughing right now. The great experiment in American democracy is finished. They have succeeded in bringing us back to a modern form of feudalism. And this is by design. Now, German Chancellor Angela Merkel, in a rare public display of criticism, has rebuked the central banks, suggesting that the European Central Bank and its counterparts in the U.S. and Britain have gone too far in fighting the financial crisis and may be laying the groundwork for another financial blow-up, and she is absolutely correct, and for a very simple reason. Banks don't know how to make money other than to print it up and loan it out and collect interest on it, and they know how to shuffle it around and change the bookkeeping to make things look like they're worth more than they really are, but that's all they know how to do, and so it's hardly a surprise that's all they're doing now. And everything that they're doing basically amounts to, let's print up some more money, it'll be on the people's tab, and we'll throw it over there and see if that fixes it. And it's not going to. Because they're pouring it in all the wrong places. They're pouring the money onto the same financial institutions that gamble their way with the derivatives into this mess. They're not supporting manufacturing. They're not making low-cost business loans available to support small business, which is responsible for 65% of new job creation in this country. There's no support for that. The banks are cutting out the support for new business generation. Advanta small business cards, they just canceled them all. Didn't matter if you have good credit or bad credit or whatever. Gone. 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 So Angela Merkel is absolutely correct, because they're putting so much money out there, and they're trying to bury it in all kinds of different places to try and minimize its inflationary pressure. But again, that can't last forever. And we've got people, you know, even finally CNBC is starting to say, you know, we're heading into a hyperinflationary spiral. We all know what's coming. And we know it's the fault of the government, and it's the fault of the Federal Reserve, because it's set up to make the Federal Reserve owners rich and to allow them to share the booty with their pet politicians. And they just don't care about us. We are nothing more than walking wallets to them. Their only concern with we the people is how much money they can extract from us. That's why we have Barack Obama going around giving lip service to Al Gore and global warming and the carbon tax, and then he turns around and he authorizes taking the tops off of entire mountains in the Appalachian to dig out the coal and burn that, and he slashes funding for wave power research. Because he doesn't really care about the atmosphere, and he doesn't really care about the environment. All he cares about is, let's find another way to tax the people, and then we'll go ahead and burn the coal anyway. We're going to go to the phones. We've got Ray in Texas. Aloha, Ray. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I would keep a close eye on the Sotomayor and the most of the Roman Catholic judges they have now. And the Vatican has always been in control of the world's financial system, political system, and religious system.
I'm sorry to laugh at you, but I'm thinking about that Vatican banker they found hanging underneath London Bridge not too long ago. So, yeah. You know, and of course the stories behind the assassination of John Paul I and all that happened with there as well. I know the Vatican Bank is very corrupt. In fact, we have a story up there on whatreallyhappened.com today about the association that the Vatican Bank has had with various, you know, mafioso and various money laundering operations and some very, very nefarious things They were linked in with BCCI, and again, one of the theories for a motive for the assassination of Pope John Paul I was that once he became Pope and he saw what the Vatican Bank was really doing, you know, they very well could not refuse to show him the books, and he said, "We can't do this stuff anymore. This is not what our mission on Earth is supposed to be about." And then he got his cup of tea, and that was pretty much the end of that.
Yeah, well, you've crossed the Vatican, you're in trouble. I've been arrested 4 times for getting on radio talk shows and calling the Roman Catholic Institution a satanic cult. I got taken out and dragged out of my taxi cab by 8 Roman Catholic police at the Austin airport in 1998.
Roman Catholic police in
Austin?
Yeah,
they're all Catholics. The whole the chief and the traffic control officers and all the flunkies below, they were all...
I think you've got a good civil rights lawsuit on your hand, because unless... I think maybe you need to, look at that. Well, listen, you know, here's the situation. There are good people on planet Earth, and there are bad people on planet Earth. And, both the good people and the bad people will often cite their religion as an excuse for doing what they do. But the bottom line is, there are some bad people out there of all religions. And I'm no friend of the Catholics, because they were very rude to my family back in the 1490s in Spain. So I'm not a friend with them. But at the same time, I think you really have to say, it isn't that they're Catholic, or it isn't that they're Muslim, or it isn't that they're Jewish. It's that they're bad people, and the religion is just the excuse.
Speaking of Spain, you want to read something interesting about a Spanish Jesuit priest, go to chick.com, like the baby chicken. Read about
Alberto Rivera.
His name is Father Alberto Rivera.
And With an A or an O?
Rivera.
Well, good. Then it's not one of my family who's in trouble. All right, Ray, we're going to let you go here. Thanks an awful lot for the phone call. And I want to kind of get back to some of this financial stuff here because, and yes, we're watching Sotomayor, but, you know, that's just the usual congressional infighting that they're trying to put up there. The real issue that affects your life, the real issue that affects your life continues to be the economy. And the reason I'm focusing on it today, and I know it's such a downer and I'm feeling it, and I didn't even want to do the show today because it's just some bad stuff out there. But, you know, this is what's affecting our life, and we're not seeing it change. We're not seeing our government or corporations do any of the things that would be able to turn this around, like close down the Federal Reserve and say, you know, tough about the debt. It was imaginary money to begin with. The interest is equally imaginary. And, you know, print up all the paper notes you want to pay yourself off all that interest. But we're going to go back to doing what worked for the country from 1776 onward, which is we're going to make our own currency. We're going to make silver certificates again, or we're going to make U.S. notes again, or we're going to make greenbacks. It has worked for us before. It is time to bring it back. Absolutely. Ellen Brown is absolutely correct. The time has come for the states and federal government to issue their own money and tell the bankers to take their greed and shove it. Now, speaking of greed and getting back to the economy, as you are probably aware by now, Chrysler is part of its restructuring and bankruptcy. Has sent notices to a large portion of their existing dealership saying, we're shutting you down. We're not going to support you. You are not a licensed dealer anymore. And you don't get a refund for the money that it costs to be a dealer. And we're not going to buy back the cars and parts and blah, blah. And it's just a huge, huge hit on these people. And everybody's saying, Chrysler is cutting its own throat without its dealerships. And Chrysler is saying, well, we're not going to be able to sell that many cars. And we would rather save half of our dealers and have them do okay than keep all of our dealers open and see them all go out of business. Well, I'm sorry, but, you know, natural selection tells you that if you just let business go on, some of the dealers will go out of business, and then you'll have arrived at the same situation without this heavy-handed approach. Does Chrysler have an alternative agenda here? I think they do. We'll talk about it when we come back from these words from our sponsors.
Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the last segment of our show today. We've got a caller on the line. I'm going to finish up with Chrysler before we take that phone call, though. What I was saying is Chrysler is shutting down about half their dealerships. They were in Congress today just testifying. What a tremendous... calamity this is for these people. We're talking about multi-generational car dealers who've owned this dealership, and they've supported their community, and they've provided employment, and they've been selling American cars made in America all this time, and Chrysler has just arbitrarily shut half of them down. And considering that under the economy, probably half of them would have been weaned out and culled out naturally anyway. I'm wondering why they're doing it right now. Maybe it's just they've got to look like they're doing something to justify getting in and out of bankruptcy here, and this may be it. Or alternatively, I'm going to go out on a limb here, because I think as the economy tightens up, we're going to see this corporate mindset where, I mean, they've cut the quality out of the products. They're making things so cheaply now to maximize their profits. So it's like I was talking about this Mead camera binocular of mine that I bought in February, and already it's dying on me. And I cannot get word one in response from Mead, by the way, on this issue. So they've value engineered everything to, they can't push it any further. Things are failing rapidly, and warranty costs are rising. So what they're going to do is they're going to start going with getting rid of the middlemen. We've already seen the big box stores take over from the small neighborhood stores. Now they're going to start getting rid of that. Everything is going direct to consumer, and even the cars. I think what we're going to see is the big automakers are going to be start to say, forget the dealerships. We will sell directly to you and deliver to your home this car. And that way they get rid of the car dealerships, which, you know, is a huge part of the markup. So they're going to be able to sell their cars for even less money. And, you know, they'll contract with local mechanics to take care of any warranty service. And I think that's the direction they're going to go. The big showroom car dealership may be headed to extinction, not just half of them, but all of them. And not just Chrysler, but all of the big automakers are going to do. I mean, we're already seeing more and more of these car centers are actually multiple dealerships. Like this company over here sells Hondas and Nissans and Yugos and whatever, and I don't know what they make anymore. It's not like I'm a big car person. But I think that's what's on the horizon, and that's why Chrysler is doing this. Rather than let the economy decide which dealership survives and which dealership does not, I think this is the first step to maybe moving away from dealerships and going direct from factory to your front yard in terms of the sales that way, which will work only until oil prices go right back up again. Then it's a complete disaster. We're going to go to the phones. We've got Chris in Florida. Aloha, Chris. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Well, just to pass on to Ray, the last caller, that the statute of limitations for a civil rights suit is up to 5 years past the time that the person who committed the act leaves office. So, you know, even if they're not interested in their law enforcement bond, for example, anymore, they can still, you can still attach their property, or jeopardize it in any case. But, the reason I called was that, they're, you know, not just Catherine Austin Fitch, some of these other financial, economic advisors who are so honest agree about the community currency, like Gerald Celente and, Max Kaiser. I've heard Bob Chapman say it. I know Peter Schiff, a few others have talked to, you know, that it's a viable alternative. Mm-hmm. And it would be great just to keep the, you know, like you're saying, from getting your products from a factory, and that would supposedly be a more local source to keep your wealth within the local economy rather than being parasitized. And so I wanted to let you know that if it's okay, I have a radio show that is on community currency tonight, going over the web, or here locally in here in Clearwater, Florida, Tampa Bay area. Mm-hmm. And it's on 1340 AM, mm-hmm. 9 to 11 Eastern Time, and you can tune in online at tantalk1340.com. That's okay. The website for the show, for the station. But the show is called Liberation Station. The website is liberationstation.weebly.com. And we have two guests, one who's from the local community currency, and one who is that would be the first hour, who would be Buddy Hooper, and the second hour would be Carol Brule of communitycurrency.org. So it's a very viable option, and it's our only resort because, as you said, they destroyed our whole economy, and that's all we had was the stinking dollar, as Alex Jones says. So,
let me respond to that real quick here, because we've seen these small local currencies. They've been around when when I was a kid in New Hampshire, they actually. The state issued wooden nickels just as kind of a joke, but they were considered legal tender, and they were worth 5 cents. And we've seen trade dollars. We have them here on the Hawaiian Islands, and they are designed to encourage local commerce. But at the point where the banks feel they're going to be a real threat to their income, because most of these community currencies are essentially tokens in place of the other tokens. And so ultimately, it's still the Federal Reserve's money in circulation. If you start printing up money that's completely independent from the banks, they get very, very nervous. And remember, just as the Bank of England lobbied Parliament to pass a currency act banning privately issued money in the American colonies, we already saw, I think it was last year, when the Liberty Dollar, which was an independent coin based on actual monetary worth, they were made in silver and gold, and those coins, when they started making one with Ron Paul's face on there, I think somebody's vanity in the White House got really annoyed because we saw the Treasury Department and the FBI come in and shut it all down and confiscate all the metal and say it was an illegal form of money. And so the problem is, I am absolutely in agreement, we need to have our own intrinsic money issued by the government, and but there will be a fight from the bank, because as you know, Lincoln issued the greenback and then he gets himself shot and the greenbacks get taken out of circulation. John F. Kennedy issues the U.S. notes. 5 months later, he's shot dead and the U.S. notes get taken out of circulation.
And Ron Paul endorses the same idea. He calls it the legalized competing internal currencies, that we need to legalize them. And that's something that he's interviewed on. It's interesting to see his reaction is that he says that we need to start these internal currencies in order to just protect ourselves. I mean, there's no really other way. And luckily, even I'm hearing that in my area, they've allowed community farms now. It's all already been allowed for just a small, yeah, meager $50 per year fee to the city. But, you know, of course, everybody wants to get their cut. And, you know, at least there's some headway being made. But, that's advertising the suburbs and the community currency seems to
that's,
be the only
That's thing. A big part of it. It's done for it, when as long as they're doing it for promotional purposes, then they can sort of say, yeah, it's really legal to do. But we saw it during the American Civil War. Communities were issuing their own currency. I've got some actual Lynchburg notes I picked up when I worked on the Mississippi River. Germany, during their hyperinflationary period, most of the cities started issuing their own money to isolate themselves from that terrible inflationary period. But the bottom line is, the legal structure for a replacement monetary system that exists outside the Federal Reserve already exists. The Treasury still has the authority, granted by the Constitution, to crank out the money. Kennedy's executive order 11110 was never rescinded by Congress. Barack Obama could pick up the phone, call the Treasury, and start printing up the U.S. notes right now. He doesn't need Congress to do it. He doesn't need the Federal Reserve's permission to do it. All he needs is the political will to say, I'm going to save the people of this country from the Federal Reserve bankers.
Well, according to Jim Tucker, that's the opposite of what the Bilderbergers would have him do, because they just said that they're afraid of what you just said, breakaway independent systems where people are self-reliant. So I appreciate all the time, and that's something that everybody's, as they at least maybe they can hedge their investments locally in such ways.
Well, canned foods and shotguns. That's my motto right now. Canned foods and shotguns.
Don't appreciate either.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot. And that was Chris in Florida, and he's a fellow radio host, and he's equally concerned about this situation. One more story before we run out of time. I had so much to talk about today, I'll have to keep it over till tomorrow or till our Saturday two-hour wrap-up that we do in the morning here. Democrats in the U.S. Congress have reached a deal to boost support to the International Monetary Fund. And, ooh, how wonderful, warm and fuzzy. We're going to provide another $100 billion credit line, which means it's your money, again, they're borrowing, to the International Monetary Fund, increase the member contribution by $8 billion, and authorize the United States to back the IMF's plan to sell 400 tons of gold, which is going to depress gold prices and keep them down so that people won't desert the stock market for hard assets here. So, again, what they're doing serves the interests of the banks and doesn't take care of you and me. And if the government isn't working for you, why should you work for the government? That's it for our show today. We'll be back tomorrow for our Friday show. More news, your phone calls, and until then, stay safe, be well. Hug your loved ones, drive carefully, and aloha, America.